Welcome back to the Balance Boldly podcast for ambitious women in business and a few brave men. I'm your host, Nikita Renthigpen. Always excited to be in the place with you. Today, we have an incredible, humble human. Sheila Buswell is the CEO and co-founder of Buswell Biomedical, a veteran of the U.S. Army, and the author of Is This Seat For Me? Overcoming Imposter Syndrome in Everyday Life and Business. Sheila is just such a potent human for so many reasons, but I won't give too much away. I'll let you see for yourself. Sheila, welcome to the BBP. How are you today?
Great. Thanks, Nikita.
I'm so excited you're here.
Likewise.
So you and I were having some really good green room conversations. We had a great conversation prior to the start of today with our call. And I feel like we should have recorded every element of all the conversations that we had, because we were talking about the depths of imposter syndrome personally, as well as professionally. But what really made me curious about you was your book when you said, "Is this me?" And it really stood out for me that you didn't even know that you had imposter syndrome because of the industry you came from. So I would just love for you to share with everyone just a little bit about why you decided, especially with your professional background, to kind of venture down this rabbit hole.
Gladly. Nikita, my story is not the traditional path, not even for me. It wasn't the one I planned. I don't know how people, but like, plan anything at 18. But I ended up in the Army when I lost my scholarship. And so I ended up fixing generators. And in the Army, you component replace. And so I spent time in the military. And then I, as a generator mechanic, I learned how to fix generators to avoid cleaning toilets, because that's what detail meant to me at the time. And then I went to after my medical discharge, that's a whole story. I go to engineering school to complete my education, right? And I didn't have any self-doubt. Like, of course I can do engineering. I, you know, learned how to fix generators to avoid cleaning toilets. And I did all of those things, went through engineering school, go to my first mechanical engineering job. And when I was very firmly planted and I can do this because I did that.
Yeah.
So I moved along this path of, I was firmly planted in what I could do. I knew that I could do this because I did that. And I moved through engineering that way. There's not a lot of women in engineering, but I never had the traditional problems with imposter syndrome because I, you know, like that wasn't something that came because of the non-traditional path I took.
Yeah.
I was, you know, like I didn't have the questions in my own head about that in that sense. I had it. The reason I wrote the book is because when I started my own business, I had to learn about computer science and business. And when I asked questions to further my knowledge, people are like, "Oh, is that imposter syndrome?" And I noticed that I was getting questioned like that, imposter syndrome, when I asked questions that were technical in nature. And I didn't know what imposter syndrome was. When I did know what it was, I was like, why is that question directed at me?
Right.
So when I started writing this book, I was convinced I don't have imposter syndrome. After, I am capable of self-examination. I do have imposter syndrome, just not about that. Like, my imposter syndrome is different. I think most people have it. But my imposter syndrome peaks its ugly head around other women, like groups of women in general, and babies or little kids. You know, it's just not something I experienced. And I didn't have that background to fall back on. So when I started doing, when I started writing this book, first I was like, I don't have imposter syndrome, and I do. And then I learned that this is a common problem that, everybody has. So
it's so interesting what you're saying about the newness of a thing. When you were doing something new, like when you were in your foundational industry, you were fine. You didn't necessarily feel like there were any doubts around, do you have the skill set? Do you need to upskill more? Because you were already doing all the things and you felt very accomplished in that industry. But when you moved to something new for you, which was the business and adding computer science and all the things that were new for you, that's when that little monkey mind, as we call it, started to creep up and say, hey, what are you doing? Who do you think you are? Why do you think you have the right to do this? And all the little things. And to your example around when you're around other women that might present differently than you or have children, because children aren't necessarily a part of your individual dynamic with you and your spouse, the newness of a thing started to, you know, creep in, and that's where the questions began. And I think that's such a good point, Sheila, because for many of us humans, the ambitious women, as well as a few brave men that are out there that are willing to admit it, when you feel like you have something down pack, that's typically not where the imposter syndrome, you know, raises its ugly head. It's when you have a new version of yourself to compete with, because now you're moving into a new genre, you're evolving, you're trying something new. Maybe at your first 2 years of business, if your goal was to help, I don't know, 1,000 people and make $1 million, once you've done that, you know, whatever the numbers are, however many people, doesn't matter, just an example. But when you've done that, you felt very accomplished. But then you work with an advisor or a coach or strategist who says, oh no, we can 3X those outcomes. Well, now this is something new, right? Like, even though it's using your same skill sets and transferable skills, it does make you question your questions and doubt yourself a little bit. So I think that's just a really important thing to highlight when people like you are saying, like, no, I don't have that at the level of accomplishment you are, but what happens when you're ready to brave a new world, a new version of yourself?
Well, and I think that's so in your comfort zone, you're not growing. And do you have to care and step outside the comfort zone and look, be uncomfortable and try something new? Like you said, it's when you stretch. And in my book, people talk about, where you don't fit in necessarily, but also you're trying to grow and learn. And your brain doesn't, it's wired for safety, not for, you know, exceeding like your boundaries or where you are right now. And okay, you look to the left and you look to the right, and you to have to train yourself, this is why I belong here. This is why I need to stay here. And not instead, you automatically look for why you don't fit in. So in my book, the male nurse talks about how like people would make assumptions because he didn't fit stereotypically what people think of with a nurse. And everybody has had the experience where they go to the hospital and what their expectation is. And I have always identified myself with the woman doctor, but I have never thought about the male nurse until I read Peter's story. And I think you never understand how those expectations can, you know, affect people in a myriad of ways, and they're not always good, and you have to protect yourself because, you know, you're not always in control of the culture. So, but yeah, changes, you have to care.
And yeah, you do. And you made a really good point, like your own unconscious bias, as well as the implicit bias that's just a part of the cultural norm, because you're a woman, you identify as a woman, and you're seeing another woman who's a physician, and you're like, yeah, we're peers, right? Like, you're seeing yourself kind of reflected through the mirror of that gaze. But when there's a male nurse, you're not necessarily, not just because of the gender necessarily, but when you add in gender with that title that tends to be associated with females, it does bring, if you're honest with yourself, and I have to keep underlying that, because a lot of us are walking around avoiding being honest with ourselves about our own challenges, our own biases, our own thought patterns, our own stereotypes. But if you're willing to recognize and be more aware of those things, you can see, all right, I can empathize with how difficult it is for this male nurse, and, you know, for the short story that's enveloped in your particular book, I can empathize with how strange it is for you to do something that's so normal for you, that feels good to you, that's purpose work for you, and other people to question it because you don't fit their idea of who or what should be doing this work because you look different than their expectation.
Yes. And it's so frustrating that in 2024 now that mm-hmm. it's the expectation exists that still exists, that yeah. you have to look a certain way to fill a certain role. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to say. I really feel strongly that imposter syndrome is a thing, you know, and you have to empower yourself to defeat it. And I think that there's tactical ways that one can empower themselves to like do it, because everybody, it affects so many things. And yeah empowering yourself is huge.
I agree. So what were some of the ways you empowered yourself once you admitted that, hey, you know, I may not necessarily have this with specific work areas, but I had this in other areas. What were some of the tactical things that you just personally enveloped for yourself?
So the way I avoided it, I first thought about how, like, I'm in my undergraduate's mechanical engineering. I have worked in an engineering field. And there wasn't a lot of women in, you know, in the military. But I mm-hmm. always thought of my past experiences. And I was like, okay, this isn't the first hard thing I've done. So my first thing was to just expose myself. And I'm a work in progress, right?
Yeah.
So I am continually putting myself in places. And again, it has to matter to you. So like the baby thing, I still don't. Like, please don't ask me to change diapers, right? Because I won't do it. Like, my husband has changed more diapers than I have. But since I've maybe changed one in my life, and I have 15 nieces and nephews, or 30, like 30 counting my husband's, but like 15 on my side. But like, my past achievements, and I've done this, and I've done this, and I've done this, and I think, well, I can do this. And I've had to give myself pep talks. Like, of course I can go into a brunch that's all women. Like, because I did this. You know what I mean? Like, I was at a women's only strength building gym. And it took, I know that this is going to sound some kind of way, but like, that was a scary thing for me to do and to learn how to apply makeup. I was like, well, I did a concrete countertop. I will figure out how to do mascara. And like, I didn't know what an eyelash curler was, but I learned because I Googled it. And it's intimidating when I don't know stuff. So I first found out I bought makeup brushes. And I got in a spiral of negative self-talk. And that's one of my things, is like practice positive self-talk.
When absolutely.
I got a makeup brush. I didn't know what it was for. I like texted all my friends, like, I don't know what this thing is for. What, please explain it to me. And I took a picture of it and they're like, yeah, I don't know. And then what I learned was, okay, then just don't use it. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of people who have makeup brushes that they don't use, but I didn't know that at the time. Like, I thought you had to, like, there was a kit and I should know all the things in a kit. Yeah. So,
and you don't have to. I mean, I think you raise a couple of good points that I'm hearing. Is one, when the negative self-talk is coming in, make sure that you reframe and replace with positive self-talk, because otherwise you'll go into a deeper spiral that it's really hard to pull yourself out of. But also being really mindful that the flaws that you've identified as flaws for yourself, you have a choice to fold them or fix them. Like, just picking on the kind of niece, you know, your 30 nieces and nephews, right? With all of the different stages they were in since you and your husband were married, and many of them were infants in that stage. And some, you know, maybe they came in when you got married, were toddlers and teenagers or whatever. But you could have said, hey, I'm going to voluntarily practice this and babysit and learn how to change diapers, which would be the fixing of the quote unquote self-identified flaw. Or you could say, you know what? This is who I am. I'm going to fold it in. No, I'm not watching your infant. Send them to me when they're potty trained, right? Like, that's when I'll be able to support you in terms of babysitting in that example. But then you also made a really valuable point in terms of what is expected for tools that people made up. Makeup brushes, which I'm grateful that they exist, especially for people who are like super into makeup. I am not. But if you're super into makeup and you don't want to get, you know, foundation and concealer and all the other various things that, you know, are part of the accessory kit of makeup on your fingers, then makeup brushes are really, really helpful. However, someone said that this is a standard that you must use. And you said, I don't necessarily have to do that. I can use a buffer. I can use a cotton ball. I can use my fingers. I could choose not to apply whatever needs to be applied with a brush and choose not to use that at all. So you can make up your own palette of tools and kits for those things that other people, even an industry, you know, the makeup industry, is that the name of the industry? I don't know. The cosmetic industry has said that this is kind of standard. It doesn't mean that you as an individual have to hold the standard. I'm a huge believer in following the rules to a T, specifically so I can learn how to break them. Like, that's why I follow rules. I'm not a rule follower. I do follow rules very, like, my type A turns on. I get very serious about the structure, but I'm learning it so I know where is most effective and beneficial for me to break or in some cases bend the rules. I'm not doing it because I'm a rule follower, because I'm not. I'm really rebellious by nature. And that's really important for me to have identified for myself that this was something I wanted to fold in that other people might have seen as a flaw that I chose not to fix, right? Like, this is just who I am. So I hear you saying really clearly, Sheila, like, you know what? It's okay that I didn't, nor did any of my circle of friends know what these freaking makeup brushes were and what they were used for.
Well, I think thank you for saying that. There is a lot to what you don't know, you don't care about. And right. I think the makeup so specifically was something as I got older. I think we were talking about hair earlier, but like my hair went gray. Yeah. Like extremely fast. And within a short amount of time, my sister, who is 9 years older than me, I was mistaken for her mom. And my husband, he was mistaken for me. He's older than me. And he was mistaken for being a lot younger than me. And I was like, wow. So like, I think I came home from Boston. It was a little, both of them were like, you know, teenagers or something. I came home and dyed my hair immediately. But before that, I was like, nope, I'm not going to do that. But so I've heard this quote before. A boat doesn't sink because it's in water. A boat sinks because it lets the water in. Mm-hmm. I let the water in. Like,
right.
It started to matter to me that I looked old.
Yeah.
So I wanted to fix that. And it bothered me in so many ways. And my eyebrows were disappearing and my eyelashes were disappearing. And so I went down this path that I had, and I was like, I hated being ignorant.
Yeah.
This is something that I was very aware that other people had established this knowledge and I was in my 40s and I'm learning for the first time what an eyelash curler is. Right? That's something 12-year-olds learn, you know, and that was hard. When I got out of the military, I helped my sister watch her kids. They weren't babies. They were small children. But I learned a lot. And it helped me conquer a lot of my fear around kids.
Yeah.
One of my number one offenses is one of the number one things I find offensive is when a woman places a baby for me to hold in my lap. Here you go. Hold my baby. And I'm like, my husband, he's like third to the oldest. He's held a lot of kids. Mm-hmm. He's perfectly comfortable. I stiffen and I freak out because I don't want to hold your baby. I like babies. Totally like their purity. Just don't want the assumption made that I want to hold your baby.
Right.
And I think because of my age and my sex, the assumption's made and it bugs me. But little kids... So I wasn't, when I got out of the military and I watched my sister's kids, this is in the book too, but I talk about how like my niece was two or something and she came up to me to complain about her brother teasing her. And she was like mumbling and she was really upset. So I was like, go compose yourself. I can't understand you. Go compose yourself and come back and tell me. And I'm like, I didn't know at the time. That's not how you talk to a 2-year-old. But these are lessons that you know what I mean? Like I kind of have learned, but I didn't. So I think instead of talking to myself like, oh, I messed that situation up, I'm like, those kids are alive. They're adults now. They seem right. to be thriving. I mean, I don't know what kind of damage was done mentally, but
none. Okay. You gave them vocabulary that eventually someone would explain over time. And that's how they build vocabulary, right? Like, they didn't know the word give, thank you, or bottle before someone gave them the language, right? And then helped the association. So I hear what you're saying, but with perspective, you know, like, listen, I didn't hold them upside down over the toilet and tell them to pee, right? Like, I didn't do anything that could have really damaged their sense of grounding or safety or any of those things. It was, I used more sophisticated, I won't even call it adult language. You just use more sophisticated language than they had some background association with for their, which they weren't even getting at the time, but their sightless words, which is totally okay. It's such a cute, innocent thing that you did out of just the lack of awareness of using smaller terms with kids that might have been in their vocabulary. It was such a cute and innocent thing, but I hear what you're saying in terms of the, like, the bigger you just don't know what you don't know, you don't necessarily care about what you don't know until you realize that there's a reason to care, right? Like, when you have a child that you have consented to taking care of, not one that's placed on your lap, you know, when you have someone that you're consenting to take care of and watch, that makes total sense. Well, as you were talking, you made me think you've had a lot of milestones of growth from your former industry that you've, you know, pulled into your business. And now you're also an author. So that was another new thing that you had to do with, yes, you wrote research papers and did statistics and wrote all kinds of documents that you had in white papers for your previous industry and manufacturing, but writing a book for an audience that is wanting to kind of tap into a relatability of the pain and problem solving that is it me, you know, kind of solves for them in the book with all of your short stories is a whole nother version of you. And in this means you need different rituals and routines and practices of your own self-care because you are different than you were 10 years ago or 20 years ago before you started your business and before you became an author. So now that you're, you know, the 2024 version of Sheila. And like we were talking in the green room, it's 80-20. You know, some days you got it down, some days you don't. It's all good. But when you feel like you have it down and you're doing well, how do you give yourself permission to pause?
We talked about like boundaries is your favorite word, I believe.
But yes, like, it is.
I have rock hard boundaries on time. And mm-hmm. When we talked too that my Monday and Tuesday were not great because I violated my own boundaries or I let my boundaries be violated.
Yeah.
I don't know how to put that. But I think I let myself pause by stepping away from all the things that I am to just, you know, relax and pause during working out, you know, during non-working hours traditionally. And I have found like when I was in the throes of writing the book and running the business and doing everything, I was working 16-hour days, 7 days a week. My husband was the one who was like, yeah, you can't do that. And I was like, you're right, but I didn't know how to stop. And then I got pneumonia and I couldn't get it to go away. And then it was like, there is nothing. So I think that's one of my favorite quotes is Rocky Balboa, who's not a real one. He's like, life, the hardest punch you'll get is from life. It's not you. It's not me. And he's talking to Apollo Creed. But he's like, it's life. Life will punch you. So it was a lesson I had difficulty learning, but I had to learn it to get over pneumonia. So now I have rock hard boundaries and I pause. I work from 9 to 5. And then aside from that, I pause. And I like try to work out. I drink wine. I drink coffee outside that. And I do the things like I listen to podcasts like yours, the Think Boldly. And I really think that I focus on not my brain is hard to control, but I think that because I'm more effective, like I think one of your previous guests talk about bringing the most versus bringing the best.
Yeah.
And I think I'm able to be more impactful because I bring the best, because I take that pause.
No, and I agree with you. It's really important, especially when you are what I would consider multi-hyphenated and multi-passionate. That's how I identify as well. And sometimes it does make you question, like, what is happening with my brain right now? Because I feel like I have a flood or a stream, multiple streams. You know how they say have 7 or 8 streams of income? Sometimes I have 7 or 8 streams of thought coming in at the same time when I only want one of them to be filtered out and come out in the most clear, concise, communicative way. But sometimes it's really challenging when you have a what I would consider a beautiful brain that is absolutely capable of being a machine pulling in all of your expertise mixed with your inner brilliance, which is your intuition. So helping you kind of dial down or dial in how to say this thing the most effectively. And then you also have your other thought that you want to follow up with coming in, and the example or analogy or metaphor is also coming in, so you can give the visual for the way that person or those people that you're talking to might need to hear it differently. It can be a little challenging. It's one of the reasons that I share stories so much, you know, whether they be actual case studies from the clients that I work with, or personal journey stories from myself, or an actual kind of analogy just to hold the anonymity of those people that I'm referring to in those case studies, or even the personal journey if I'm talking about myself, but other family members who don't want to be identified are included in that. Is one of the reasons that I use it is because there's so many things coming in, like, be mindful of how this person needs to hear it. You know, their learning style, their retention style might be different than yours, Nikita, like all those things. So as I'm looking at you talk, Sheila, and I know everyone listening to this across various, you know, podcast players don't necessarily see your face unless you're following us on YouTube at The Lazy Overachiever Show. Hashtag plug. But if they're not able to see your face, they can't see how I literally am watching you process as you're flowing in the conversation with me and being completely present, but also trying to pull in those kind of streams of context and conversation to dial it in so that I, Nikita, who's sitting across from you visually, can hear it, but I also know you're speaking to the listeners. And that can be It's like a gymnastics game, man. Like it's a whole tumble process.
Well, and I think your analogy about streams makes so much sense, because you're not effective,
right?
When you're trying to, and I didn't realize how ineffective I was. Like I literally was looking for my phone with the flashlight on my phone. Now, I intellectually knew better than that, but I was like, I didn't realize, or I wasn't able to say, okay, I'm doing too many things. Yeah. And that's why I'm making such a mistake, I don't even know what, but like, okay, that's just where my phone
mixing it up. Yeah.
Right. Like if you're doing stuff like that too much, you're going to get stuff confused, and it just, yeah.
I guarantee you there's a huge volume of listeners right now in this moment hearing you say that. And they're like, I did that before I turned on this podcast. I was listening to this podcast, trying to look for my phone so I could turn the podcast on, right? Like from the phone that they were listening to. It definitely happens. I think it's not just an age thing. You know, granted, we are women of a certain age. And so, yes, there's this running joke that as you learn more things, you make room for those new learnings by pushing out, you know, old information. It's both a joke and there's truth to that. But then there's also just the reality of you stop caring about some of the little things that didn't matter as much. And in the not caring about the little things, because you made room for the bigger things, some tangible moments like, hey, I need my phone to, you know, have this access to this conversation on air, can get mixed out. It's not a non-important thing. It just wasn't a big thing. You know, perspective is everything. But I guarantee you people are laughing right now like, girl, I just did that same thing 2 seconds ago on all the levels. So Sheila, before we go, I have to ask you, how can people connect with you and learn more about your book and the work that you're doing?
I have the website is named after the book, is deceitforme.com. Mm-hmm. If you just go to that website, you'll get a free chapter audiobook of the audiobook, like email to you and we'll start an email conversation.
I love that. That's perfect. That's perfect. Thank you so much for carving out time with us today. I really appreciate your potency, your humility, your ability to focus in on all the streams to make sure that the right one is dialed in for the listeners. Like, I really do appreciate you carving out time today. Thank you.
Thank you. Likewise. Yeah.
Balance Boldly listeners, as usual, I promised to deliver and I did. I hope you really enjoyed this conversation on air today with Sheila Buswell and myself. So if you are new to the BBP, which is the Balance Boldly podcast for ambitious women in business and a few brave men, I want you to do two things. The first is to think of one person in your ecosystem who could benefit from hearing Sheila's story and share this episode with them. If you have 5 or 20 people and you want to share it all over your IG, your LinkedIn, your Facebook, feel free, go ahead, go for it. But I'm only asking you to share with at least one person because it does make a difference. And the second thing that I need you to do is to go. Enjoy the balance of your day. But remember, do it boldly.